Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today I'm joined by Eric Connor, a clinical therapist with advanced training in trauma resolution, sexual addiction, and other compulsive behaviors. He seeks to use modern technology and evidence-based approaches to facilitate health and growth. He believes that our brains and emotional selves will always seek healing and growth given the opportunity. The more we discover how this happens, the more effective and efficient therapy can be. Eric Connor, I consider a friend. He's a really awesome guy. You're going to love this podcast. He's going to teach you about how to develop self-awareness, how to eradicate the shadow self, and why intimacy is the key to leadership. Thanks again for tuning in and enjoy the show. So I'm excited to be chatting with a friend, Eric Connor, who is going to bring so much value to this episode regarding leadership and our own emotional health. Eric, I've been liking to ask my guests this question in the beginning. Who are you and why are you here?
I'm still trying to figure that out myself. No, I, as you said, my name's Eric Connor. I'm a mental health therapist, and I've kind of got a focus around addictive behaviors and also things like shame and codependency and even how we kind of build self-esteem and self-efficacy in us. And so I've been doing, this is kind of a second career for me. I had a career in kind of business and technology beforehand, but I run my own practice in the Chicagoland area, but I'm really into leadership. And, you know, I work a lot with leaders. I work with some educators and we talk about kind of some more personal things about, you know, what it means to be a leader, not so much from what we're doing, but even from like the being standpoint.
Well, can you dig in today? Let's start there. You've already piqued my interest. So what does it mean to be a leader and that being? Let's focus there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about emotional health. And so, you know, emotional health, it's kind of a broad topic, but it's really important. And kind of, you know, the way I begin when I talk about emotional health is to some degree, it's about your level of just self-awareness. Kind of about like who, you know, who you are, you know what your strengths are, and you know like what your blind spots are. You know, Carl Jung, you know, very famous kind of psychologist, spiritual kind of guru kind of guy would say we all have this shadow self. And so when does my shadow self show up? Am I aware of when that shadow self is showing up? And how does that affect the people around me? And so wherever you are, there you go. And if you're at work or if you're at school, if you're at home in your marriage, I mean, you know, who you are as a person is going to be there in all its fullness. And so I think part of what emotional health is doing the work to know like who Eric Connor is and knowing when I'm in my full adult and knowing when I've got some stuff that's kind of maybe being triggered and kind of coming out in an unhealthy or sideways type of manner.
So if this is new, this idea of like what triggers me, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm familiar with this type of language. I go to therapy mm-hmm. once a month mm-hmm. and having this idea of my adult self, child self, all this type of stuff, like what kind of practical steps or how can leaders develop this type of self-awareness so that they can lead an organization in a healthy way?
It's a great question. So you know, you touch on a couple of things there, which are, you know, it's just like general, like a general framework for how we can discuss this. Okay. So first of all, I think doing personal work is, I think it's imperative for all leaders. And I just like to say that from the get-go. You know, I think whether it's coaching or counseling or something of a blend of that, it's so important when we're in a position of influencing others so that we can do that to the best of our ability. So things can show up in a lot of ways. I'll give you an example. Okay. So if I, you know, we've all kind of got a story to our life. And when I say a trigger, it usually means that something from the past is coming up and being projected out into the present circumstance. But it's not really related so much to the present as it is to kind of the, you know, like the past where it kind of got embedded in us. And so, you know, we can have figures in our life. We can have situations that happen to us that were hard. And sometimes these things were even traumatic. And what we know is that, like, our bodies, for example, store all of our memories. It's not just in our prefrontal cortex. And sometimes we've got memories that are, you know, they don't really have too much of a picture to them, but they're just much more stored as sensations in our bodies. And so things can happen in everyday life. So maybe there's someone that was very difficult for me to live with or to be in school with. Well, I can be triggered by somebody in my work environment or somebody that I work with or even by, you know, by another teacher. And in my mind, I will say it is all about this teacher. But the reality is, it's probably about 10-15% of that. But the situation feels so much worse, so much more urgent, because there's actually a historical basis for it. So we say, like, you know, if it feels kind of hysterical, it's probably historical. Now, why is that important? Because if I'm not aware of that, I will really assume it's about the other person or the present circumstance, and I can react to that. And there may not be the outcome that I desire because I haven't done the work to know, you know, what part of this is coming from me.
Well, that's very interesting. So if I hear you correctly, I mean, there's things in the past that happen that in our memory we have stored, in our bodies, even in our physical bodies we have stored, like muscle memory, and something could happen within a day. It's probably stressful. Maybe it's conflict related. And my amped up response to that is because I'm responding as to this event that happened potentially 20, 25 years ago, whatever. So how do you unwind from that? If you have that self-awareness and then you're like, wow, I'm going to want to kill this person, what do you do?
Therapy. But, you know, but like a question that I tell people to ask themselves is, like, in a given situation, how old do you feel? And if you don't feel your kind of birth age, you know, your chronological age, you know, if you're like, I'm actually feeling like I'm 16 or I'm young, there's probably something being stirred up for you. And so, yeah, so you have a responsibility to kind of work on what that is. Sometimes it's just like talking it out. A lot of this is related to self-care. Like, when we're taking care of ourselves, when we are finding, like, the right, you know, way to feed ourselves and to rest and to work out and to meditate or do yoga or whatever you do for yourself, which, by the way, that's another topic we could probably touch on, self-care, because I find a lot of people have no idea what I mean by that.
That was my follow-up question.
Yeah. So, well, let's go there. Self-care is how we take care of ourselves. And a lot of times people, they have never heard that. But self-care is like, what do you need to do, Daniel, to make sure that you are your best person? And that will usually entail like a certain amount of rest, a certain amount of, you know, sleep, things you do for leisure, ways you connect, you know, whether it's in your marriage or your family, what it means to kind of work and make and fill you up. And then people do all kinds of things around, you know, yoga, meditation, et cetera, et cetera. So people that aren't aware of that, they might be just kind of burning the candle, working 80 hours, not taking care of themselves. And then when we're in that place, we can't self-regulate. And self-regulate is another term I want the audience to know. That's the ability to kind of monitor myself and to regulate my emotions in healthy ways. So if I'm not practicing self-care, I'm a leader in a school or a leader anywhere, then I'm getting triggered. I will probably overreact to that situation. Whereas if I'm taking care of myself, I'm kind of aware of like what my trigger points are. I'm working on self-regulating. I can manage these situations much better, or at least get through them until I have a chance to kind of, you know, process it further.
You know, this is really valuable information for our listeners. And Eric, what do you do yourself specifically for your self-care? What does that look like for Eric Connor?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, there's a certain, you know, I try to eat healthy. I try to, you know, kind of be very conscious about like the food I eat. There's a certain amount of times I need to work out. There's a certain amount of sleep that I know that I need. I can let myself go a night or two, but after that, I got to kind of catch up. I try to take one day a week where I totally disconnect from electronics. That's a way that I practice self-care. So tries to be one day a week. It's usually on a weekend day where I really try not to look at email. Not always successfully, but that's something that I do. I think regular vacations are important. One thing I do as well is I say once every 6 months, I try to practice a day of solitude. And there's kind of guided retreats on that. I will go out there's a couple of beautiful areas on lakes that they do this. And you just have a day of silence just to kind of reflect and think about your life. And so those are kind of generally ways that I work on myself. And then also my own therapy and how I take care of myself with that. And particularly as a therapist, I'm going to have my own triggers come up even in session or, with clients. And so I have to be able to kind of take care of myself in that way too. So those are all kind of examples of ways that I practice my self-care.
So at this point, I bet everyone's like, hey, I want to hire Eric. I need him to help me learn how to self-care, self-regulate, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I know you practice in the Chicagoland area. So where can people find you?
Yeah, so my website, it's recover-restore.com. That's recover-restore.com. And my email is eric@recover-restore.com. And you can reach me. It's all on the website, but the number here is 224-801-1700. And I'm going to be working again some content on the website and doing some videos and all that. But I'm happy, for anyone that hears this, I'm happy to even kind of even have a free consultation phone call for anyone that's just kind of wondering about self-care or wants to think about some next steps for themselves.
Wow, that's really nice. And do you do online clients at all, or does it have to be face-to-face?
Yeah, I do some online. It kind of depends on where the client is. I mean, I'm licensed in Illinois, so there's ways that we can kind of do that here. When you get outside of Illinois, then there's some kind of ethical concerns there. But yeah, there can be certainly some Skype sessions and phone sessions. And so I'm happy to talk to people about that. Or, too, to try to refer them to someone in my therapist network that could be a good fit to maybe closer to where they live if that's what's best for them. But for myself, my office is outside Chicago. It's in the Barrington Palatine area. And so that's kind of where I was working in downtown Chicago for several years before that. But this is kind of my kind of headquarters right now and pretty conveniently located to a lot of the Northwest suburbs.
What was it like to start your own practice?
Ups and downs. I say it's kind of like a stock price. It's going to go up and down, but as long as it's generally up and to the right, yeah. you're okay. So, it actually was a kind of a fantastic experience. And, as we're talking about like self-care and your emotional health, I mean, it kind of requires the best. But I've always had kind of this, leadership is something that I love and I read about, and I think I have some kind of leadership gifts. So that aspect of me and kind of the entrepreneurial side was really excited about it. So it's been like a really good journey. And, you practice certain principles. There's a lot of trust. You trust that it's going to work out. If you start a podcast, you're trusting that the right audience that can be served are going to come. And so there's very much a kind of one day at a time, So, self-care can be mental too. Do I constantly think about the next 3 months and I can't fall asleep? Or what does it mean to just focus on today? I've got plans for the month, but what does it mean to make today the best day? And then when today's done, I'm going to let it go. And then the next morning, I'll kind of start it new. So I think self-care becomes really important when you're an entrepreneur because you have to work very hard, but you have to prepare yourself for a marathon. It's not just a sprint or you're going to get burned out.
So, as a school leader, I think you have to fight through fear. Especially mm-hmm. when you are leading a new initiative, there's change mm-hmm. there, new things to learn, and you just don't know what's at the other side of it. I'm sure a lot of those feelings that a school leader would feel would be potentially maybe what you felt jumping out there mm-hmm. and, like you said, starting a whole new practice, trusting yep. it will work out. Do you have any ideas around like how you push through that fear, how you trust that it will work out, stay positive and all that, especially when you're leading an organization too, and it's not just you doing it.
That's a great, great point you just kind of brought up. I use a word with almost all my clients, men and women, and it might not be what you initially think it means, but we talk about intimacy. And so I think immediately when I think intimacy, people think, well, physical intimacy. That's not what I'm talking about. Intimacy is generally vulnerability. And so I tell all leaders, you cannot be isolated. You must have someone or a group of people that you can open up and be vulnerable with. That's actually how we diffuse the fear. We diffuse the fear when we talk about it and we normalize it and we right-size it. But fear in isolation can grow large. And every time that we back up against the fear, it kind of grows. It's like kind of like whatever you're thinking about and focusing on, it gets power. So yes, absolutely, for leaders in schools, you're going to have fear and you're going to have concerns. There's going to be questions. And so my encouragement is, we can't be a lone ranger. We've got to find community. You know, Daniel, you and I, we've talked about mastermind groups.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
Mastermind groups are a perfect example of a way that you have a group that you come to on some a monthly or biweekly basis and says, here's where I'm struggling, you know? And the goal is we got to kind of find some safe context to just take the mask off and let the guard down and be like, all right, here's what's going great. And here is where I am just, this is hard. You know what I mean? And then to have support to hear like, oh, yep, absolutely. I'm struggling with that too. You know, we need to hear stories in other people that connect us to our own story and our own struggles. So, yeah, so fear is a very big part of it. And we're all going to have, and fear is going to manifest, you know, usually because we are projecting out to some outcome and some worst case scenario that feels not right to us, you know. And again, that can very much be tied into what worst case scenarios have we experienced in our life and where have we just kind of built these sensitivities like, I can't let this happen again. So fear is real. It doesn't really necessarily go away. So, you know, all this stuff that we say is, you know, it's courage is doing it, you know, not in the absence of fear, but, you know, despite the fear. But we have to kind of have community. And even out here, I'm going to be working with a couple of coaches, kind of, you know, pretty, you know, high-powered functioning executive coaches about what does it mean to kind of have a mastermind group where we bring in a psychiatrist and a therapist and then coaches so that people can, you know, it's a real safe context to talk about what it means to be kind of a very high-functioning leader.
Oh, that's great stuff. You heard it here, folks, from the Eric Conner. The antidote to fear is community, and check out the Better Masterminds links in the show notes if you'd like to join your school leader and unique community to bust through that fear, accomplish your goals, have a safe space to talk about your wins and your losses. We love you here at Better Leaders, Better Schools and want to help you out.
Yep. And there's been so many studies that have been done around mastermind groups and just what a catalyst that is for people in all kinds of ways. So, yeah, I encourage the whole audience, if you don't have some mastermind group structure, you know, think about that because it's huge.
Yeah, I talk about it quite a bit on the podcast. Obviously, it's something that I personally invest in myself, and I've seen the benefits, in the months that I've participated. And we just had a retreat in Texas too. And Eric, I'm telling you, that was like a revolutionary moment in my life that I know I'll always look back to. I'm almost even thinking that outside of my marriage, that was the biggest weekend of my life. That's how impactful it was. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy how much it influenced me and just really have my eyes set on the right things and surrounded by the right people to support me.
That's fantastic.
So you mentioned your leadership gifts. What would you describe those as and how'd you develop them?
Well, so, you know, I think when we talk about leadership, so much of that is just like the ability to really to influence, you know, and to do so. You know, I think about leadership when there's no money involved. You know, if you can influence people in a direction without a paycheck, that shows pretty significant leadership. And so, you know, what are the characteristics of a leader? And I think that, you know, there's a sense of passion and really believing it. I know for me as a leader, I have to believe it. I can fake it for a little bit, but eventually it just starts to come through. So I have to have a sense that whatever it is I'm leading or influencing people about, and I do influence in terms of encouraging people to maybe get into a therapy group or recommending an intensive or recommending like a next step, because in my heart, I believe it's best for them. So I think that's a big part of it, is authenticity and feeling strongly about it. And I think, at least for me, and I think this is a therapist, and this is quite a challenge, but I try to live by this principle that I won't ask people to do something that I have not done myself or wouldn't be willing to do. So if I ask clients to make a significant, you know, decision about maybe, you know, spending, you know, a week long in like kind of a therapy camp or joining a group, that in my heart is something that I would do, you know, and a lot of that stuff I have done. And so I think that's a big part of authenticity too, that you have been to the place that you're trying to kind of, you know, lead people. And so I think off the top of my head, those are kind of a couple of leadership, you know, axioms that I try to do my therapy practice by. And, you know, also too, as part of leadership here in my practice, is that, you know, people really matter. So I try to put people and their self-care first as opposed to their output. So the focus is always on like, how are you as a person? How are you doing? As opposed to like, and then we can get into kind of the output, what you're working on and kind of what needs to change. And so always, and even this is a therapeutic principle, you got to always focus on the heart first and focus on building that connection, that relationship before we get into, you know, how are we doing from a kind of partnership or work context, you know? And in fact, this might be helpful too for, you know, for some of your leaders, like they've done all these studies around therapy and why does it work and when does it work? And, you know, is it cognitive behavioral? Is it, you know, Rogerian? Is it, you know, psychodynamic? In all these studies, there's really only one correlation they can really tie in kind of a research type way to successful therapeutic outcomes. And that one thing they've been able to find is the quality of the relationship between the therapist and the client. And usually underpinning that relationship is a real sense of presence and unconditional positive regard. So what that all means is when you're working with a client or you are being a leader, as you are focusing on the relationship first, at least in therapy, that's the best shot you have to successful outcomes. It really is not so much about technique and all that. At some point it gets that way, but the foundation is on that I-thou relationship and on unconditional positive regard for you as a person. And then when that gets established, now we can have some very kind of intimate, authentic discussions about, you know, what needs to change and where we're going.
Wow. That's like a goldmine, what you just struck on there. And, you know, I'd be willing to bet that if we zoomed out and just really looked at effectiveness, impact in all types of organizations, that it starts with this relationship connecting at the heart. You mentioned presence and unconditional positive regard. For listeners that sounds absolutely frightening to, but they know it's important, they know it's the right thing to do, and they're not sure what the first step is. Do you have any strategies on how we can develop that?
I don't think it's rocket science. I mean, it's, you know, I've worked at a variety of companies and I've been at companies where, you know, some of like the CEO or some of like the kind of top leaders, they never came over to talk to anyone else unless it was because there was something wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, you're clearly not going to build a relationship that way. So it's, you know, so I think a lot of it, it's just showing that you are aware of this body as a person and aware that this person is much more than a role or a job. And what does it mean to make some efforts to just kind of connect on a human basis? And this is not, I mean, you don't need to kind of go out for a 4-hour lunch, although maybe you want to. I mean, sometimes it's just the smallest things just to, I mean, if you were to come up to somebody and be like, hey, I want you to know, I've just been noticing that you've been doing this. I think it's great. And I so appreciate you. I mean, you do that to somebody and after that, they're like, I'm going to go through a wall for that guy.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's what does that emotional bank account mean? Now, sometimes leaders don't have that capacity. And so they're going to have to find other ways. Like, they're just not emotionally aware. They're not emotionally available. So that's just like not in their toolbox. But if you have that capacity, how do you purposely build that into the people that you are influencing, you know, because that's the stuff that's really the stuff that matters. And as you do that, you know, now you're going to have people that, you know, slowly kind of become, as we say, like, you know, like those, some like raving fans or whatever. So again, it's kind of the heart over the head initially. And I use a lot of, you know, feely language. And so I get it. I'm a therapist. Not everyone's going to talk like this, but
I love it though.
Right. But you get the gist of kind of what I'm saying. What does it mean to focus first on this human being as a person, and then from there, how do we kind of work within that context? And like I said, I really don't think it takes a lot of time, and it's not that difficult, but you just kind of have to be mindful of that, you know?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think I'm speaking from a pain point in my own life, not that this is something I struggle with. I think I do it well, but some people I care about that are in leadership positions, I see them just screwing up relationships and creating divides between them and others because of a lack of awareness, uh-huh. You know? And even when we talk about it and you try to show it, because, you know, I was really impacted by Bill Hybels' talk last year with blind spots and mm-hmm. during the leadership summit, he said everybody has at least 3.4. So I'm thinking, hey, this must be a blind spot, and you share it and it doesn't sink in. And you just see him, I guess, throw grenade after grenade, because sometimes that lack of awareness really can blow up an organization, because the people are walking around feeling uncared for. They're unseen. It's like they're invisible, not heard. It's terrible. So that's, I don't know. I'm not sure what I want to say about that, but it's just, it could be so frustrating for me seeing others that operate in that way.
Absolutely. I think you're kind of right on. And it, you know, we say it kind of like the polar opposites is fear and then love. And so you can rule, you can lead by fear, or you can lead by a sense of maybe not love, but just kind of respect. And I really want what's best for you. And I just think you lead by fear. At some point, that's going to run out. At some point, that house of cards is going to fall. But if you can get people, if you can lead people from a place where they really think that you are looking out for them, and in some sense you're doing your best to care, I find like that emotionally healthy teams are great. And you know what it is? It's more fun. We like being together. So, you know, I think we're waking up to that. You know, Brené Brown, a shame researcher, I think this is why she does so much corporate coaching, because we're starting to get it like that. You know, these things are really important, because, you know, at some point with any job, the money, the, you know, the free lunches, whatever, we all normalize to that. And then so much of it is the people you're working with. And if you are the leader of that group, what's your responsibility so that this is a group that has formed some cohesion together in healthy ways, not fear-based? That's creating the company or the school culture, and that has a profound effect, because as new people come in, they will assimilate to that culture.
Hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, especially teachers, they're not in it for the job perks and the salary. So, like, you need to have that high level of emotional intelligence. Wow. Yeah, that's so good for our listeners. Thank you.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
So here's an opportunity to be vulnerable. What would you say would be your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
I haven't really made any, Daniel. So can we ask another question? No, just kidding. I've had a lot of kind of leadership mistakes. I think the one that I'll bring up is self-leadership. There was a time kind of earlier in my career where I took a job that I knew, this is before I became a therapist, I was working in kind of finance and some technology intersections. And I took a job that in my heart I knew I couldn't, that was not best for me. But I created some denial around myself that I wasn't listening to myself. And sure enough, I got into this job, and within like 6 months, I got fired because it was just a terrible fit. I was taking it for the prestige. I was taking it for the lure of money. And those aren't necessarily bad things. But in my heart, I knew that that this was not who I was. But I shut that down. And so I tried – what I learned from that was, you know, that I can't be good at everything. So I might as well really try to figure out, like, what are my strengths and really kind of focus in on those. That's another kind of principle, is, like, trying to focus more on your strengths than trying to fix your weaknesses. But another principle, too, that I try to use in my life and I encourage clients to use is I try to live in consultation. And so I do try, you know, we talk about intimacy and we talk about having a group that's around us. I do try to kind of run big decisions by people. And, you know, I trust what I call the group conscious. And so I think if a group kind of generally comes together with some consensus about what they think that differs from how I'm thinking about the situation, I have to think really long and hard about it. Doesn't necessarily mean I can't, you know, listen to my own gut and follow through. But what are some checks that I have in place so that I don't fool myself? So that that was an example. My shadow self was driving that decision to take that job. It wasn't coming from an authentic sense, because it was tapping into possible blind spots, and that could be money, that could be the you know, possibly the prestige or what people would think about me, as opposed to being true to what I know about myself. And so that's an example that I give around kind of self-leadership.
It's also another plug for the Better Masterminds, because when you have big decisions as a school leader, there's no better place to run those by.
Yep.
You know, you got a group that cares for you, loves you, and wants you to do well. They are for you. It's that trust in the group consciousness. Love it. So thank you for sharing that. So how do you avoid distractions and stay focused?
Boundaries. We all need both external and internal boundaries. And so, you know, at some point we got to let, I think it's really healthy that we have a boundary where we kind of, you know, we let go of work. You know, when I start my day with clients, I really try to not look into any, you know, sometimes I can like look at social media or I can check an email in between clients, and it's like something that I kind of wasn't aware of. And now that, you know, the next session is starting and I'm like in my head and I'm like, oh shoot, now I got to figure this out, you know? So I try to kind of have some boundaries around, you know, really technology and social media, or, you know, cause you don't know what you're going to get, or emails. And so when I'm working, like, how do I stay kind of present here? I talked a little bit about one day a week trying to shut down all technology so I can just kind of connect more with myself and other people around me, and even just like with nature, and just try to get outside and do things that way. And then, you know, I think the other thing kind of with distraction is just a plan and just focus. And so I do try to kind of plan out the day. I try to plan out my week, and I try to be aware that when I get an extra 10, 15 minutes, I just don't naturally fall into, we'll just hop on the computer, you know? And so those are just some kind of general ways that I kind of try to keep distractions down. Everyone's got to kind of go through that process. I think it's like healthy for some people though, when we're able at some point, record all your time for a week. I was mentored some time ago by a gentleman who just had a good influence on my life. But I would really, you know, for a couple of weeks, I measured every hour. And so I could really see where was my time going and where was I being distracted by things that were not the most important. And so that's the good, better, best. But I think if we were to do that, we'd be shocked and how much time can get sucked away with really inconsequential things not related to kind of our mission.
So was that just like literally you had a calendar or notebook and you jotted down during this 5 minutes, this half hour, like here's how I spent my time? Because I love that strategy.
Yep. I created an Excel template. And so a week was a tab. And then I just kind of created the chunks in there, you know, and obviously not doing like in 15 minute interviews, but just generally kind of recording what I kind of did throughout the week. And so, yeah, it takes work, but it's enormously helpful. I think one therapeutic and kind of behavioral change principle is that it's very hard to change what we don't measure. And so, for example, like people that are trying to, like there's apps like my MyFitnessPal. And just the simple act of putting in your meals every time you eat, we know from research will profoundly enhance the possibility that you're going to reach your goals. There's something about measuring it and just putting it in that brings our brain back to the goal. And so I think whenever we're trying to create any change in ourselves, it's we have to kind of measure it. I mean, even 12-step recovery for people that are coming out of, you know, any kind of addictive or compulsive behavior, you know, a lot of them, they do like what's called a 10th-step inventory. And at night, before they go to bed, they just kind of write down how they did that day from an emotional level. Like, where were they? Where do they feel envy? Where were they selfish? And that's a way of measuring how they're doing. And just that act of measuring helps them to change. And so that's kind of what the distraction, the time management thing is too. But I just encourage anybody, even if it's a real shorthand way, whenever we're trying to change or grow as a leader, find some way to measure or document it. Because just that act will increase the odds of success.
So I think, you know, from what you said with the Excel sheet, I'll whip up some type of template and link it up in the show notes. So that could just be a free gift to our listeners if you want to start taking an inventory of how you spend your time. Eric also mentioned MyFitnessPal, and I've heard a number of awesome leaders talk about that, to have you focus on, I guess, healthy eating and portion size and that type of stuff. So we'll link that up as well. So that's because it's hard to change what you don't measure. Is MyFitnessPal, is that one that you actually use?
I use that. I mean, there's some other good ones out there, but I use MyFitnessPal, and I mean, I like it, and it's just about what's going to be easiest for me to use to just kind of measure how I'm doing. Which, you know, which by the way, just, I mean, you know, if we haven't kind of stated it, and it, maybe it's the obvious, but so much of what we're talking about, what it means to be a leader and to be emotionally healthy, is that it's so holistic, right? Like, we can't be a good, we don't want to just be a good emotional leader. We want to be healthy in all aspects, so that we have a physical nature, we've got a spiritual nature, there's an emotional side to us. And so what does it mean that in all these areas, we're trying to do our best to be at our best? So, you know, eating, for example, is really important. It's really important. And how you eat in terms of how you can be a leader and how you have energy, like these, you know, this is not small stuff. So absolutely, how you eat and what you're eating, that totally affects our ability to be present and to be energetic, which will absolutely translate into our effectiveness as a leader.
What do you think in terms of books? What book would you recommend to every principal that's listening or school leader that they should read right now? Why should they read it?
Well, one book that I got to bring up, because I just think it's so interesting, is that there's a book out there called Spark. It's a very popular book, but they did some research at a Naperville school, and they had some kids do like some kind of like intense aerobic exercise in the morning. You can read the book for the exact details, but in a nutshell, they had some kids like kind of run a mile or two with heart rate monitors up, so their heart rate got up to a certain level. And what we know happens with that is that the brain starts to grow new neurons that are kind of primed for connection. And so they had some subset of these kids do this and then study a certain topic, and then they noticed that over the year there was a measurable difference in how the kids that exercised in the morning did versus the kids that did not. So what came from that, and we know this, is that like exercise, for example, is hugely important for the brain and our ability to learn. And so I think that's like, just, you know, we talk about, you know, PE and things like that. Like, these are all very interesting things about how do we get kids in a place where they're going to be best able to absorb and learn new information. So I think that's a really fascinating book. There's a book that we use a lot. I have a kind of another business that I'm part of called Flank 5 Academy with people that are kind of trying to change careers, but it's called Mindset by Carol Dweck. And that's just about what it means to have kind of a growth mindset. Like, I can figure this out. I will learn how to do this versus fixed, where it's like, I either got it or I don't. And so I think when we think about self, you know, competence and self-efficacy, so much is about what you believe about yourself and what you're able to figure out. You know, that is such a developmental thing for kids too. Self-efficacy is huge. Like, that kids somehow through school, through their families, through, you know, teachable lessons, they start to learn that they have what it takes to figure it out, so that when new circumstances come up, you know, maybe they don't know right away, but they start to believe that I'll get on top of this somehow. So that's kind of a growth mindset, and that it's really helpful for anybody in a leadership or even kind of educational setting.
Well, Eric, I want to congratulate you. You've been an awesome guest. I've got one more whopper of a question and then we'll say goodbye.
Okay.
You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget and your only limitations your imagination. How would you create this school if you're given a blank slate, unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Okay, without a doubt, there would be classes around emotional health. So you would have some sort of like therapist teachers or people that are trained in counseling or social work, not necessarily in that capacity, but helping to teach kids about, you know, things like self-care, how we take care of ourselves, what our emotions are about. I think that is way too much neglected. Our emotions teach us and all that. So something about that. When I talk about Spark, I would absolutely have treadmills and like spin classes and stuff like that in the school that kids are required to do as they're able.
Yes.
Because I really think that a school that did that with all the students regularly, you would see your SAT and ACT and all these scores start to really bump up compared to other schools that did not. And then the final thing is that whatever we can do to make learning like play. So I think there's a lot of, you know, teacher lecturing. How else do we learn? Some kids, you know, some people, it's got to be kind of tactile, but how do we make learning into something that feels more like play? So how that plays into the school, you know, I don't know, but those are probably three ideas that I kind of have.
Those are three great ideas too. So social emotional learning, getting that physical activity starting off in the wee hours of the morning prior to learning, and then making learning fun, laughing, and then not just in a lecturing sort of format, but yeah, that is definitely not foreign to schools, and the better schools are adjusting to that. So you're right on with that, Eric.
All right, good.
Thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice? And again, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so just, you know, you can email me at it's Eric Connor, Connor, and you can email me at eric@recover-restore.com or call anytime at 224-801-1700. And I guess my parting words I tell people is you have what it takes. Just keep telling yourself that whatever you're facing, whatever's going on, you absolutely have what it takes or you wouldn't be handed that situation. So if you're handed it, you can handle it.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Eric. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Eric in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you could tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Eric, thank you again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
My pleasure, Daniel. Thanks so much.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.